and it tingles all over again. After riding the roller coaster and eating hot dogs, we walk back to the bike to get the blanket I stowed there and head toward the amphitheater. Codaline is playing, I tell him. Nicholas has a bunch of their songs on his phone's playlist. He stops walking and his face goes almost blank, but his eyes are the brightest green. Then in one move, he pulls me up against him and kisses me breathless. He presses his forehead against mine.
This is absolutely the best thing anyone's ever done for me. Thank you, Olivia.
I smile, and I know it's radiant, because that's how I feel, right now, in his arms, lit from the inside, like a luminous shooting star that won't ever dim. Inside, as we stand on line for drinks, Everything I Do by Bryan Adams pours from the speakers. I love this song, I tell him. It was my prom song, but I didn't get to go.
Why not?
He asks. I shrug. I didn't have time or a dress.
Didn't your boyfriend, Jack, want to show you off?
He wasn't that into dances. Nicholas makes a disgusted sound.
Definitely a ruddy tool.
After that, I notice that he keeps his head down, his chin tucked, trying to conceal his face. I lift his chin. This hiding in plain sight thing only works if you don't act like you're trying to hide something. He grins a little self-consciously, and the dimples show up. Most of the people here would never think that you'd be here, and the few that do are probably too chill to make a big deal about it. New Yorkers are cool about celebrity stuff. He looks at me like I'm nuts.
Not the ones I've seen.
I shrug. They're probably from Jersey. Nicholas laughs, a deep chuckle that makes me close my eyes in the hopes of hearing it even better. But then, a voice comes from behind us, kind of gravelly, probably a smoker, definitely from Staten Island.
Oh my God, do you know who you look like?
Nicholas's hand goes rigid in mine, but I squeeze it because I got this.
Prince Nicholas, right?
I tell the aviator glasses-wearing blonde, letting my New York accent come through.
Totally. You know, I heard he's in town.
She points to Nicholas.
And you could so be him.
I know. I keep telling him we should move to Vegas. He could get work as an impersonator. But he doesn't listen to me. I jiggle Nicholas's hand.
Do the accent, baby.
With a soft look in his eyes, he speaks in his normal voice.
I don't have an accent, baby.
I laugh loudly as the woman behind us goes crazy.
Oh my God, that's nuts!
Right? I sigh.
If I'm lucky, I'll find out he's some long-lost relative.
A register to the right opens up and I step towards it, telling the woman,
Take it easy. Have a good one, she says back.
Nicholas throws his strong arm around my shoulder and I lean in, pressing my nose against his shirt, smelling that awesome deliciousness that is him. Then I look up at him.
See, I told you.
He kisses my lips, nibbling in that way that makes me moan.
You're a bloody genius.
I have my moments. After we get our drinks, two beers each in red solo cups, we walk on the grass until we find the perfect spot.
Now what?
I think he could be my boyfriend asks.
Have you ever drunk cheap beer, listened to good music and made out on a blanket? Surrounded by a couple hundred people in a field, under the warm sun all afternoon?
Never had the pleasure.
I lift one cup.
Today, you will.
Nicholas. Olivia and I stumble through the revolving door into the lobby of the plaza, holding hands, stealing quick kisses, giggling like two randy teenagers ditching class for a quickie in the broom closet. Lying with her on the blanket throughout the afternoon, kissing her long and slow, without a care who was watching, because no one was, has made me desperate for her. And hard. Christ, so hard. So if heads turn our way, or camera phones come out, I don't give a single shit. All I care about is my cock pressing against the confines of my jeans, thick and hot and aching. Anticipation. Has there ever been a sweeter word? I've never had to wait. Not really. Not for this. I had no idea the build-up, hours of sizzling, teasing, delayed gratification, could be such a heady aphrodisiac. My blood rushes and Olivia's eyes sparkle, with lust and playfulness and hunger. We make it into the lift, and the moment the doors slide closed behind us, I pick her up into my arms, press her against the wall and ravage her mouth, tasting deeper than I was able to before. She moans around my tongue as I grind against her, relishing the pressure that won't bring any relief. But it's fine, thrilling even, because I know soon she'll be naked and spread out on my bed, and I'll be able to drive into her tightness again and again until we're both worn out. Or we break the damn bed, whichever comes first. As the lift rises, I lean back and look down, watching my denim-clad crotch thrust deliberately against her heated center. My cock slides exquisitely, right there, against her soft, sweet flesh, concealed beneath the thin fabric of her black cotton leggings. But I can feel it, and it feels sublime. With her fingernails biting into the back of my neck, Olivia pulls herself up, lips to my jaw, teeth scraping my stubble.
"I want you to fuck me everywhere, Nicholas," she pants. "Come everywhere, between my legs, on my chest, my mouth, down my throat. Oh, oh, it'll be so good. Everywhere, Nicholas."
"Fuck yes," I hiss, feeling crazier with each word. Note to self, cheap beer makes Olivia wild. Stock up on the stuff. With a ding, the lift opens to the penthouse. Home sweet home. Olivia locks her ankles at my lower back, and I carry her, palming and kneading that luscious ass, across the foyer, heading for the bedroom. My journey is halted in the living room by the head of my security team, waiting on the couch, stiff as an angry board and frowning. And suddenly I don't just feel like a teenager. I feel like a teenager who's been caught sneaking in past curfew, stinking of sex and smokes and liquor.
"So, you're back then?"
Logan stands.
Yes, it was a grand show," I tell him. "No incidences occurred. No one seemed to recognize me."
He throws his arms out, imitating a fed-up mum now. He sounds like one, too.
"You could have called. I've been here all afternoon, going half out of my mind with worry."
And I know it's rude, but the amazing day and the certainty that I'll be balls-deep in Olivia quite soon makes me too happy to care. I chuckle.
"Sorry, mum."
Logan is not amused. His teeth grind so hard I think I hear it.
"This isn't funny, my lord. It's dangerous."
His eyes shoot to Olivia for an instant, then back my way.
"We need to talk. Alone." "All right, settle down now."
My hands happen to be exquisitely filled at the moment. I give Olivia's arse a squeeze, making her giggle and hide her face against my neck.
"We'll talk in the morning, first thing. I promise."
His gaze darts between us, still looking unhappy, but he nods.
"Have a pleasant evening," he grinds out, then marches toward the elevator.
Once he's gone, Olivia peeks out from her hiding spot.
"I don't think he likes me anymore."
I kiss the tip of her pert little nose. "I like you." Then I push my hips forward while pulling her closer, letting her feel every hard inch. "Do you want me to show you how much?" Heat rises in her cheeks.
"Yes, please."
Then she bites her lip and adds with a meek accent,
"My lord."
Hearing that from Olivia's lips does things to me, makes me want to do filthy, dirty things to her. Without further delay, I carry her to the bedroom to get to it.
Olivia. Most of the time, Bosco sleeps in Ellie's room. She brings him in with her and shuts the door, just to make sure our dad doesn't trip over him when he staggers in, or Bosco doesn't find a way to actually open the refrigerator door and eat until his stomach bursts. But sometimes, Ellie gets up in the middle of the night to pee and forgets to close the door behind her, and on those nights, Bosco usually ends up in my room. If I'm lucky, he curls up quietly on the foot of my bed or burrows in close to me for warmth like a furry, ugly baby bird. Usually, I'm not lucky, because usually, Bosco is hungry when he finds his way into my room, and I'm the feeder. So he wants to wake me up, but he doesn't lick my face or bark to wake me up. He stares at me. With those black, beady little eyes, he stares hard and long, and though it sounds weird, loudly. And that's the exact same sensation I get later that night when I'm asleep next to Nicholas. Like someone or something is staring at us so intently, it's deafening. I feel it before I open my eyes. But when I do, I see a woman in white standing at the foot of the bed, gazing down at us. My lungs scrape to inhale shocked, terrified air. It's more than a gasp. It's a prelude to a scream. But then I feel Nicholas's hand on my chest, under the covers, steady, strong, pressing just enough to be meaningful, to tell me he sees her too and that I need to hold it in, hold it together. The moonlight from the window casts the huge room in a bluish light, making the woman's skin shimmer in a milky glow. Her hair is dark, chopped in a bob to her shoulders, her face bony, with points at her chin and nose, but not unpretty. Her eyes are fixed on Nicholas, dark and shiny, and fucking Looney Tunes crazy.
"You're awake," she sighs. "I've been waiting for you to wake up."
Nicholas's throat works reflexively, but his voice, that captivating voice, is smooth and reassuring.
"Have you?"
"Yes, it's so good to see you again."
His fingers move just slightly against my sternum, saying, "It's okay, everything's okay."
"It's good to see you as well," Nicholas replies. "How did you get in again?"
She smiles, and goosebumps rise all over my skin.
"It was just like we agreed. Work at the hotel. Pretend to be a maid until you give me the signal. You always have those boys with you, so I knew when you started sending them away at night, that was my sign."
"Crap." Her eyes jump to me, as if I said it out loud, but I didn't.
"Who is she?"
she asks, sounding the same level of insane but not nearly as happy.
"No one," Nicholas says.
So coldly, so sure, it stops my heartbeat for half a second.
"She's no one."
Nicholas reaches down, grabbing his pants from the floor, then slides into them as he stands up.
"I want to hear about you. Let's go out to the living room and chat."
"But I want to stay here," she pouts. "In the bedroom."
"There's a bottle of Krug Vintage Brut chilling, and this occasion definitely calls for champagne."
Nicholas smiles easily. He's really good. If the prince thing doesn't work out, he could totally be an actor.
"All right."
The woman giggles, mesmerized. Once they leave the room, I throw on the first thing my hands touch, Nicholas's button-down shirt, and dive for the phone on the nightstand to call for help. But then there's a shattered scream from the living room, piercing and heartbroken.
"What are you doing? Let me go!"
I've never run so fast or been so afraid. In the living room, Nicholas has the woman pinned on her stomach on the couch, her hands behind her back. When he sees me, he says,
"My mobile's on the bedside table. Dial 7. It'll put you through to security."
The woman cries and screeches like a wraith.
"You're ruining it! You're ruining everything!"
And when she pulls against his hold on her hands, Nicholas tries to calm her.
"There now. Shh, don't do that. You'll hurt yourself. It's going to be all right."
I don't know why I don't move. It's like my brain's disconnected from my feet.
"Olivia."
The sharpness in his tone makes me blink.
"Mobile,"
Right, right. And then I sprint down the hall and do exactly as he says. What seems like hours later, the woman is taken away, and in addition to the regular security guys, there are policemen and hotel staff in the suite. Nicholas, dressed in a soft gray t-shirt and running pants, talks to them in the living room. While I, feeling more put together in my own clothes, jeans and an old peasant top, wait in the bedroom, with Logan. Logan St. James, the head of Nicholas's personal security team, is the strong silent type. But in this moment, he doesn't really need to say anything. His eyes do all the talking for him. They're deep brown, almost black, and they glare at me with the withering heat of 1,000 dark suns. I swallow nervously. Where's a trapdoor in the floor when you need one? This is my fault, isn't it? I find the nerve to ask.
You can't put ideas in his head about not needing security.
Well, that answers that.
He's an important man, Olivia.
I know.
He has to have his wits about him, if anything happened.
I know that...
You don't know. You never would have pulled the shit you did today if you knew.
Logan closes his eyes, breathing quick, like he's trying to rein in what I suspect is an explosive temper.
He can't afford to be screwed stupid by some New York gash.
Before the nasty words have time to register, Logan is hauled back by his collar and slammed up against the wall, hard enough to make the light fixtures rattle. Because suddenly Nicholas is there, pressing his forearm right against Logan's throat.
Speak to her like that again, and you'll be picking your teeth up off the floor. Do you understand me?
When the answer doesn't come fast enough, he slams him again, making Logan's head bounce against the sheetrock.
Do you?
Logan stares him down, his proud jaw tense and stubborn. Then he gives a jerk of a nod. Nicholas takes a step back, holding his hands open at his sides.
We both know the fault here is mine, so if you want to rail at someone, have at me. Get it off your chest.
Logan straightens the collar of his suit with a tight, resentful tug.
Putting on a helmet doesn't change who you are. You can't walk about and pretend it does. Yes, I realize that.
Logan's lips purse and his thumb taps his thigh with agitation.
I want to switch hotels, quietly. All right. And I want more men here. I want some at the coffee shop. It's insane that you come and go to an unsecured location so often.
Nicholas agrees, and Logan goes on.
I want a tale on Miss Hammond and her sister. It's pure dumb luck the press hasn't gotten a photo of them yet, and I want them covered when that happens. I agree. And no more nights in the suite, or afternoons at concerts or wherever the fuck without security. You want to get yourself killed. It won't be on my watch. You let me do my job the right way, or you find someone else to do it.
Nicholas's eyes dim, the way an animal's do when it's locked back up in its pen.
I shouldn't have put you or myself in that position. It was foolish, and it won't happen again.
After a moment, Logan nods and then bows to Nicholas. He walks toward the door, but then stops and turns to me.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have spoke to you that way. I don't lose my temper often, but when I do, stupid shit comes out of my mouth that I don't mean. None of this is your doing. Can you forgive me, lass?
I nod my head slowly, still stunned by all of this. Of course. It's all right, Logan. I understand. He nods, gives me a quick smile, and leaves, closing the door behind him. With a weary exhale, Nicholas sits in the chair by the desk. He digs his palms into his eyes, rubbing. Then he lowers his hands and opens his arm.
Come here, love.
Greedily, I fly to him, sitting in his lap, wrapping my arms around him, feeling pure relief when he returns the favor. I tremble against him, shaken to the core.
Are you all right?
He asks, his breath warm against my neck. I think so. It's all just so weird. I straighten up in his lap, needing to sort my thoughts. I can't believe that woman, the way she acted. Like she was so sure she knew you. Has this ever happened before?
A long time ago, A man snuck into the palace, into my grandmother's private dining room.
My heart tightens with concern for a woman I've never met, but I realize that because she means so much to Nicholas, she already means a lot to me.
He didn't intend any harm. It was similar to the last tonight. Delusional.
I hold his strong, handsome face in my hands. I think I'm only just really starting to get it. It's like Logan said, you're important, and I knew that, but I don't think of you as Prince of Pembroke, heir to blah blah blah. My eyes touch every inch of his face. To me, you're just Nicholas, this amazing, sexy, sweet, funny guy, who I really care about. His thumb brushes my bottom lip.
I like that you look at me that way.
Then he clears his throat and glances away.
And I know it's been a hell of a night, but there's something I have to tell you, Olivia, before this goes any further. Something we have to talk about.
Well, that doesn't sound good. But after this, how bad could it be? Stupid, stupid, stupid last words. I play with the hair at the back of Nicholas's neck, combing my fingers through the thick, dark strands. What is it? Nicholas's arms tighten like two bands of iron, holding on like he doesn't want me to get away. And a second later, I know why.
I'm getting married.
Chapter 12. Nicholas. I probably could have phrased that better. Damn. Olivia stiffens in my arms, looking at me with big, dark eyes and a gray face. You're engaged? No, not yet. She tries to rise, but I hold her close. Do you have a girlfriend? Let me explain. She struggles harder. Let me up, and then you can explain. I squeeze her tighter. I like you where you are. Her voice turns to stone, the kind that's been sharpened into a shank. I don't give a flying fuck what you like right now. I want to get up. Let me up, Nicholas! My arms drop and she springs away from me, breathing fast, staring like she doesn't know who I am, like she never did. And it's as if a civil war wages across her face. Half of her wanting to bolt, the other half wanting to hear what I have to say. After a few moments of indecision, the latter has won. She crosses her arms and sits down on the edge of the bed, slowly. Okay, explain. I tell her the whole story, about my grandmother, the list, about all the birds that need to be killed, and how I'm the stone that gets to do the deed. Wow. She murmurs afterward. And I thought I was the one with baggage. She rocks a bit, shaking her head. That's crazy. I mean, it's the 21st century, and you have to do the arranged marriage thing. I try to shrug. It's not as arranged as it used to be. The first time my grandparents were alone in a room together was their wedding night. Wow, Olivia says again. Awkward. I at least have the chance to get to know the woman I'll marry. I get to decide, but there are certain requirements that have to be met. She leans forward, elbows to knees, her silky hair falling over her shoulder. What kind of requirements? She has to be nobility, even distantly, and she has to be a virgin. Olivia grimaces. Jesus! That's archaic. I know it is. But think about it, Olivia. My children will govern a country one day. Not because they've earned it or were elected. Just because they're mine. Archaic rules are the only thing that makes me who I am. I don't get to choose which ones I'll follow. I shrug. That's life. No, it's not, Olivia says quietly. It's my life. And she stares at me. Her expression hardens and her eyes turn steely, pinning me to the wall. Why didn't you tell me?
All these nights, why didn't you say anything?
There was no reason to tell you, at first. She stands up fast, voice rising.
Honesty is a reason, Nicholas. You should have told me.
I didn't know.
You didn't know what?
She sneers prettily.
I didn't know it would feel like this,
I shout. The scorn fades from her face, along with the anger, replaced with rising surprise, maybe a bit of hope.
Feel like what?
Emotion coils inside me, so new and unfamiliar, I can barely put it into words.
I have just over 4 months, and when I walked into that coffee shop, I didn't know that I would end up wanting to spend every single day of it with you.
The corners of her eyes crinkle, and her mouth pulls up in the tiniest of smiles.
You do?
I cup her cheek and nod. Talking to you, laughing with you, looking at you. Then I smirk, preferably being buried deep in some part of you. She snorts and pushes at my shoulder. And then I sober. But that's all I have to offer. When the summer ends, so do we. Olivia combs her hand through her hair, yanking a bit. I sit back down in the chair, adding, And there's more.
Oh, Jesus, what? Is there a long-lost child out there somewhere?
I flinch, even though I know she's joking. Logan was right about the press. It's just dumb luck that they haven't snapped your photo yet. A matter of time. And when they do, your life is going to change. They'll talk to everyone you've ever known, dig around into the financial situation of Amelia's, comb through your past.
I don't have a past.
Then they'll make one up, I snap without meaning to. It's out of frustration. Frustration that time is short and the walls are closing in. It's not easy being my friend. It's even more difficult being my lover. Think of me as a walking, exploding bomb. Anything near to me will eventually become collateral damage.
And you seemed like such a catch,
she jokes, shaking her head. Then she stands and turns her back to me, thinking out loud.
So, it'll be like Dear John, or Sandy and Zuko in Greece. A summer fling, an affair, and then you'll just leave?
That's right. I stare at her back, waiting. My stomach rolls with nerves, because I can't remember wanting anything as much as I want this, as much as I want her. When a minute passes without a word, I offer. If you need time to think about it, I... Olivia moves quickly, spinning around, cutting off my words with the urgent press of her mouth, her sweet lips hot and demanding. My hands automatically find her hips, pulling her forward between my knees. Then she straightens and runs her finger over her lips, gazing down at me.
Did you feel that?
The spark, the electricity, the desire that feeds on itself, relishing the relief of contact, but always wanting more.
Yes.
She takes my hand and places it over her breast, where her heartbeat throbs wildly in her chest.
And do you feel this?
My own chest pounds with the same rhythm.
Yes. Some people go their whole lives without feeling that. We'll get to have it for 4 months.
Her eyes dance with moonlight.
I'm in.
A few days later, I'm scheduled to attend a dinner in Washington, D.C., a benefit for the Mason Foundation, and Olivia agrees to accompany me. When she worries that she doesn't have anything to wear, I arrange a shopping trip at the Fifth Avenue Barristers after closing. Because I'm not a gentleman, I help her in the dressing room when the saleswoman is otherwise occupied, giving her a hand and a finger
getting in and out of all that binding clothing. Mostly getting out of it. She settles on a deep, jewel-tone plum-colored dress that clings to all the best places, and gold strappy heels. They show her a simple diamond necklace that would look fantastic with the outfit. But Olivia won't let me buy it for her. She says Marty's sister has something more suitable she can borrow. After we leave, it nags at me, though, the necklace, for purely selfish reasons, because I want to see her wearing it. It and nothing else. Talk about prime spank bank material. But when the night of the dinner arrives, and I see Olivia for the first time at the helipad, I forget all about the necklace. Because she's a vision. Her lips are dark rose and shiny. Her midnight hair is swept up elegantly. Her tits are high and stunning. I take her hand, kissing the back. You look amazing.
Thank you,
she beams. Until her eyes settle on the helicopter behind me. Then she looks ill.
So, we're really doing this, huh?
I fly whenever I have the opportunity, which isn't nearly as often as I'd like. And Olivia's never flown at all, not in a plane or a helicopter. It's exciting to be her first. I told you I'll be gentle. I guide her towards the custom craft that the CEO of an international bank, who's friendly with my family, was kind, and shrewd enough to loan me for the evening. Unless you're in the mood for a rough ride, I wink.
Slow and steady, cowboy,
she warns,
or I'll never ride with you again.
I help her into the soft leather seat, buckle her harness, and carefully put her headset over her hair so we can talk during the trip. Her eyes are round and terrified. Does the fact that that turns me on make me a sick bastard? I'm a little afraid that it does. With a quick kiss to her forehead, I walk around and climb in. Tommy rides in the back. Logan and James drove ahead earlier to confirm security details and will meet us when we land. With a thumbs up to the ground crew, we lift off. Olivia freezes next to me, like she's afraid to move or speak. Until we bank to the right. Then she screams bloody murder.
Oh my God, we're tipping!
She grabs my arm. Olivia, we're not tipping.
Yes, we are! Lean this way.
She shifts her weight away from the window, in the opposite direction of our embankment. And Tommy, trying to be helpful, leans with her. I level us off, but her grip on my arm doesn't let up.
Look at the view, sweet. Look at the lights. They're like thousands of diamonds on a bed of black sand.
Olivia's eyes are squeezed shut so tightly they almost disappear into her face.
No thanks. I'm good like this.
I pry her hand from my arm, one finger at a time. All right, here's what we're going to do. You're going to put your hand on the stick and fly the helicopter. Her eyes spring open.
What?
You're afraid because you feel out of control. I tell her calmly. This will make you feel better.
You want me to touch your stick so I'll feel better?
She asks incredulously.
Sounds like a line.
I laugh.
No line.
But my stick always makes everything better. You can't go wrong touching it. I take her hand and put it on the control, teasing her. That's it. Grip it firmly, but don't strangle it. Don't stroke. Just hold it for now. I know it's big. Get used to the feel of it in your hand. Olivia snorts.
You are a dirty, dirty man.
But she's forgotten to be afraid, just as I was hoping. And after a few minutes, I take my hand off of hers, and she holds the control steady, all on her own, her face flushing with happiness.
Oh my God,
she gasps, and that turns me on too.
I'm doing it, Nicholas. I'm flying. This is amazing.
We land about 2 hours later and drive to the Smithsonian, which has been decorated dramatically with crimson swathes between stone pillars and sweeping spotlights along the red carpet. As we pull up, I see the familiar flash of cameras. Front door or back? I ask Olivia, turning to face her in the limo. I mean the question exactly as it sounds. She looks at me with a hint of a dry smile.
Don't you think it's a little early to be talking about the back door?
I smirk. Never too early for the back door. She giggles. But then I turn serious, because I know just how much I'm about to turn her life upside down. And then, in less than 4 months, I'm going to walk away. Olivia doesn't understand yet. Not really. If we go in the front door, they take your picture. They find out your name, and the world goes mad. But it's our decision. If we use the back door, we may buy a little more time, but we won't know when or where or how the discovery will come. Just that it will. I smooth my hand over her knee. It's up to you, love. She angles her head, gazing at the window, watching the throng of photographers, seeming more curious than anything else.
What will we say?
Nothing. We don't give them anything. They'll write what they want and take their pictures whenever, but we never confirm or deny, and the palace doesn't comment on the personal lives of the royal family. She nods slowly.
Like when Beyoncé and Jay-Z got married. It was all over the papers, the flower delivery, gossip from the caterers. Everyone knew, but until they actually confirmed it, no one really, really knew. There was always that shred of possible doubt.
I smile. Exactly. After a few moments, Olivia takes a deep breath and holds out her hand to me.
Sorry to disappoint you, Your Highness, but there won't be any backdoor action tonight. Front door all the way.
I take her hand and kiss her, sweet and brief. Let's go, then. Olivia does well. She waves and smiles and ignores the questions that get thrown at us, like rice at a wedding. She's concerned that she'll have fish face in every photograph. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but it doesn't sound good. And there are spots before her eyes for a long while. I tell her next time to look down, below the flashes, not at them. But otherwise she gets through her first experience with the American press unscathed. In the ballroom, with a glass of wine in my hand and my palm on the small of Olivia's back, we're greeted by our hosts, Brent and Kennedy Mason. Mason's several years older than I, but there's an air of youthfulness about him. He doesn't seem like the type to take himself, or anything, too seriously. They bow, a feat Kennedy Mason struggles with because of her large, round, heavily pregnant midsection. Then we shake hands and I introduce Olivia.
We're honored to have you here, Prince Nicholas, Mason says.
He means money. He's honored to have my money here, because that's what these things are really about. Although I like the Mason Foundation, their overhead is low and they support programs that actually help real people.
But we'll miss your grandmother, Kennedy remarks. She was the life of the party last year.
She does handle the center of attention rather well, I reply. I'll give her your kind regards. The four of us converse easily, until Kennedy puts a hand over her belly, covered by a royal blue silk gown.
How far along are you? Olivia asks. Not as far as you'd think, Kennedy laments. It's twins this time. How exciting, Olivia says with ease. Congratulations. Thank you. Our daughter, Vivian, is thrilled. And I am, too, when I'm not too exhausted to feel anything.
Mason shrugs.
That's the risk you took when you married a man with super powerful sperm.
Kennedy covers her eyes.
Oh, my God. Brent, will you stop? You're speaking to a prince.
She turns to us.
Ever since we found out about the twins, that's all he's been talking about. His superhero sperm.
Mason shrugs. This is the one case where I believe, if you've got it, flaunt it. He lifts his chin to me.
He gets it.
And we laugh. After the Masons move on to greet the rest of their guests, I ask Olivia to dance, because I want an excuse to put my arms around her, lean in close, and smell her sweet skin.
I have no idea how to dance.
She eyes the large band and bustling dance floor.
Not like that.
I take her hand.
I do, and I'm an excellent lead. Just hold on tight, and let me take you where you need to go.
As with the helicopter, she's hesitant at first, but her adventurous nature wins out.
Okay, but don't say I didn't warn you.
I have a few drinks with dinner, so we decide to drive back to Manhattan in the limousine. Olivia nods off against my arm before we hit the halfway mark. By the time we arrive in the city, it's so late, or early, depending on your point of view, there's no point in heading to the suite. So I have Logan drive straight to Olivia's apartment. It's a good thing she slept on the drive home. I don't think she'll be getting back to sleep tonight. Because outside the coffee shop door, over 100 people are waiting. For me, and now, her. From the looks of the cameras, pictures, and posters, it's a mix of fans, autograph seekers, and photographers. It's safe to say Olivia's identity and address and occupation are definitely out of the closet.
Holy shit,
she blinks, looking out the car window at the crowd. Welcome to my world, I wink.
Hey, Lo, when are those extra men coming?
James asks from the front passenger seat.
Tomorrow,
Logan replies.
It's a good thing, lads, Tommy says. 'Cause like the Americans say, I think we're gonna need a bigger boat.
Chapter 13. Olivia. Have you ever wondered what overnight celebrity is like? Well, now I'm qualified to tell you. It's like when those technically dead patients on medical shows get zapped by the paddles after the hot young doctor screams, "Clear!" It feels just how that looks. Jarring. Jolting. It's as if I've been knocked down a black hole into an alternate universe, knocked into someone else's life. And in a way, I guess I have. I've been knocked into Nicholas's. It sweeps me up in its current, and all I can do is remember to breathe and try to enjoy the ride. The beginning is the hardest, isn't it always? The first morning I took Bosco out to pee and was surrounded by people I didn't know, asking me questions, taking my picture. James and Tommy stayed with me, and I saw a different side to them, the way they moved and spoke, sharp and intimidating, backing the crowd up, just daring anyone to try to get past them. It was hard for Nicholas to leave that morning. His eyes were ravaged. Because he wanted to stay, to be the lion who kept the hyenas at bay. But he knew his presence would just make it so much worse, turn the curious crowd into a frenzied mob. The next day, Nicholas has his people, the dark suits, he calls them, contact the NYPD, to make sure there's no loitering on the sidewalk in front of Amelia's. We institute a must-purchase-to-stay policy in the coffee shop, because most of the dozens and dozens of people who visit are more stalker than customer. In spite of that, there's a definite uptick in business, which is a double-edged sword. Ellie starts to pitch in after school, taking opposite shifts with me, which is a huge help. And Marty, as always, is a calm, hilarious rock I can always count on. They both bask in the chaotic attention, posing for pictures and even signing the occasional autograph when requested. Though I just think that's weird. They're both also able to keep their mouths closed when questions are asked, confirming nothing about me and Nicholas. On the third day, after all hell broke loose, I come upstairs to the apartment, finished with my shift and so looking forward to a hot shower. Well, lukewarm, but I'll pretend it's hot. But when I pass Ellie's room, I hear cursing. Linda Blair exorcist head spinning around kind of cursing. I push open her door and spot my sister at her little desk, yelling at her laptop. Even Bosco barks from the bed. "What's going on?" I ask. "I just came up, but Marty's down there on his own. He won't last longer than 10 minutes. "I know, I know," she waves her hand. "I'm in a flame war with a toxic bitch on Twitter. Let me just huff and puff and burn her motherfucking house down, and then I'll go sell some coffee." "What happened?" I ask sarcastically. "Did she insult your makeup video?" Ellie sighs, long and tortured. "That's Instagram, Liv. I seriously think you were born in the wrong century. And anyway, she didn't insult me. She insulted you." Her words pour over me like the ice bucket challenge. "Me? I have like 2 followers on Twitter." Ellie finishes typing. "Booyah! Take that, Skankalicious!" Then she turns slowly my way. "You haven't been online lately, have you?" This isn't going to end well, I know it. My stomach knows it, too. It whines and grumbles. No. Ellie nods and stands, gesturing to her computer. "You might want to check it out. Or not. Ignorance is bliss, after all. If you do decide to take a peek, you might want to have some grain alcohol nearby." Then she pats my shoulder and heads downstairs, her blonde ponytail swaying behind her. I glance at the screen, and my breath comes in quick, semi-panicked bursts, and my blood rushes like a runaway train in my veins. I've never been in a fight, not in my whole life. The closest I came was sophomore year in high school, when Kimberly Willis told everyone she was going to kick the crap out of me. So I told my gym teacher, Coach Brewster, a giant lumberjack of a man, that I got my period unexpectedly and had to go home. He spent the rest of the school year avoiding eye contact with me. But it worked. By the next day, Kimberly found out Tara Hoffman was the one talking shit about her, and kicked the crap out of her instead. I'm not used to people hating me. And from the looks of it, thousands, make that tens of thousands, of people have signed up to do just that. At ArthouseGirl47 says I have a fat ass. At Princess Bill thinks I'm a money-hungry slut. At TwilightBella5 suspects my mother was an alien because my eyes are too big and weird. And at 342FuckYou doesn't care what the rumors are. Nicholas is hers. Oh, and look at that. I've got my own personal hashtag. Hashtag Olivia sucks. Great. I slam the laptop closed and back away like it's a spider. Then I dive from my phone on the bed and text Nicholas. Me. Have you seen Twitter? I'm being photoshopped in effigy. He takes only a few seconds to respond. Nicholas. Stay far away from Twitter. It's a cesspool. Me. So you have seen it. Nicholas. Shield your eyes. They're jealous, as they should be. Me. There you go being modest again. Nicholas. Modesty is for the weak and dishonest. And just like that, my unease about the nasty comment starts to fade away, brushed from my mind like a hand through smoke. This summer affair with Nicholas is real and solid and here right in front of me. And with its expiration date looming, I'm not going to waste time, not a second of it, worrying about meaningless words from faceless ghosts that I can't change and, in the end, don't matter anyway. Nicholas. Just avoid the internet altogether. Television, too. Go outside. Bring security. It's a beautiful day. If I had a nickel for every time my mother said those same words, minus the security part, I'd be as rich as, well, Nicholas. Me. Okay, Mom. Nicholas. Not working for me. But if you want to call me Daddy, I might be able to get into that. Me. Ew. Nicholas. Have to go in a minute, love.
Meeting about to start. I'll tell Barak you said hello.
Me.
Seriously?
Nicholas.
No.
I shake my head.
Me.
You're a royal ass, you know that?
Nicholas. Course I do. The Archbishop of Dingleberry certified it the day I was born.
Me.
Dingleberry, you're messing with me.
Nicholas.
Afraid not. My ancestors were a sick, twisted bunch.
Me.
LMAO?
Nicholas.
Speaking of asses, I'm imagining mine pumping between your spread legs right now. Can't stop picturing it. What do you think about that?
As soon as I read the words, I'm picturing it too. And God, heat coils low in my belly, unfurling and expanding until my thighs tingle deliciously. My hands tremble a little as I type back.
Me.
I think we should stop thinking and start doing.
Nicholas. Brilliant. Go to the hotel. The front desk will let you up. Be in my bed when I get back in 2 hours.
Excitement bubbles through me like freshly poured champagne.
Me.
Yes, my lord.
Nicholas. If your goal was to have me meet the Sisters of Mercy sporting a stiffy, mission accomplished.
I hop off my bed, heading for the bathroom to freshen up and change. On the way, I type the only reply I can manage.
Me.
Awkward.
XO.
Days pass, and what was once jolting and new becomes routine, a regular day. It's amazing how quickly that happens. How quickly we adapt. I have a boyfriend, at least for the summer. A sexy, gorgeous, fun boyfriend, who also happens to be a royal. That complicates things, but what would probably be most surprising to the Twitterverse and Facebook commentators and reporters is how normal it all feels. We go to lunch, surrounded by security, but it's still just lunch. We visit a children's ward in a hospital. The kids ask him about his crown and his throne, and I get a round of applause when I juggle for them, something my dad taught me in Amelia's kitchen years ago. I let Nicholas buy me clothes, casual but expensive clothes, because I don't want to embarrass him by looking shabby when we're photographed together. I wear my sunglasses whenever I'm outside, and I barely hear the questions that get shouted by reporters anymore. This is my normal now. But just when I thought we'd fallen into a comfortable routine, everything changed with just one question.
Feel like going to a party?
Lightning flashes in the sky and warm rain pours down around us as James holds the umbrella over our heads when Nicholas and I step out of the car. The club is sleek, all polished onyx lacquer and stainless steel, windowless, with soundproof walls so as not to ruffle the feathers of the more conservative and ultra-wealthy neighbors. There's a velvet rope outside the door, and a mammoth bouncer in a dark suit and sunglasses waits with his own umbrella. But there's no line to get in, and it's not because of the weather. It's because this club is invite-only, every night. Inside, my house by Flo Rida blares, and it looks like it's a costume party. An 80s costume party. I see a Madonna, two princes, the Purple Rain kind, not the Nicholas kind, and a bunch of Cabbage Patch dolls that are a whole lot sexier than any of the pictures I've ever seen. The main room isn't huge, a few velvet couches and a mirrored bar along one wall. And there's a stage, with colored overhead lights that flash in time to the music. Ellie would say, "It's lit." On the stage is Tom Cruise from Risky Business, a guy wearing sunglasses and a pink button-down, and, yep, tighty-whities. He dances and waves his arms, getting the packed dance floor even more riled up. "Do you see that guy?" I yell above the music, pointing toward the stage. Nicholas's handsome face is tight.
"Oh, I see him all right."
I take a second look, and then I choke. "That's your brother?" The call Nicholas took in the suite library was from one of the dark suits in Wesco, letting him know his brother had arrived in Manhattan.
"That's him,"
Nicholas practically growls.
"Wow! He's a brat,"
Nicholas explains,
shaking his head.
He's always been a brat.
Okay, in the problematic younger sibling department, you win. Nicholas speaks to a security guy, one of the new ones, whose name I don't know yet. The guy nods and rushes off, and Nicholas grasps my hand.
Come on.
We make our way around the dance floor, through the tight crowd of bodies. We pass a Debbie Gibson and a Molly Ringwald from Pretty in Pink, then stop on the side of the stage. When the song ends and a techno mix of Fetty Wap takes its place, the security guard talks to Tom Cruise, Henry, on the stage. His head snaps up, staring at Nicholas. And then, slowly, like he doesn't quite believe what he's seeing, he smiles. It's a sweet little brother smile that tugs at my heart. He practically runs to us, jumping off the stage with feline dexterity and landing on both feet just a few yards away. His lips move. I can't hear him, but I can read what he says.
Nicholas!
Then he's here. I step back so I don't get trampled, as Henry tackles his brother in a bear hug, lifting him off his feet. They hug for a few moments, smacking backs, then Nicholas pulls away, slipping the sunglasses off his younger brother, searching his face and reading his eyes. And a concern shadows Nicholas's features at what he finds. But he smacks his brother's cheek affectionately and says,
"It's good to see you, Henry."
Henry's the same size as his brother, with the same broad shoulders and long legs. I see the resemblance in the cheekbones, but their coloring is different. Henry's hair is blonde, shaggy long and curling, and his eyes are a brighter shade than Nicholas's. Like wild grass after a rainstorm. But they have the same bearing. Both stand tall and straight, with an air of authority around them like a halo, or a crown.
"Did you forget to put on trousers?" Nicholas asks.
Henry laughs and flashes, with a big, all-encompassing smile that makes me want to smile too.
"It's a costume party."
He steps back, framing Nicholas's suit-clad form with his fingers, like a cameraman on a movie set.
"Let me guess. You are Charlie Sheen from Wall Street?"
And then Prince Henry's attention turns to me. His interest turns to me.
"And who might you be?"
I quickly review my 1980s movie mental database and pull the hair tie from my bun, shaking out the curls. "I could be Andy McDowell from St. Elmo's Fire." He brings my hand to his lips, kissing the back.
"Quick on your feet. I like that. How are you on your knees, love?"
Oh, yeah. He's definitely Nicholas's brother. Nicholas shoves him, kind of playfully, kind of not.
"This is Olivia." "Is she my welcome home present?"
"No," Nicholas scowls.
"She's with me."
Henry nods and rakes his eyes over me, head to toe.
"I'll trade you."
"Trade me?" He points at me, then spins his finger around the room.
"Her, for any girl here."
Nicholas shakes his head.
"I haven't seen you in a long while. Don't make me smack you right away. Behave yourself."
I step closer. He's teasing Nicholas. Then I take pity on the younger brother and throw him a bone. "And you're not one to talk about behaving, considering the first night we met you offered me money for sex." Nicholas flinches, and Henry's jaw drops.
"No, my brother did that. Mr. Prim and Proper in public. I don't believe it."
He nudges me with an elbow.
"How much did he offer you?"
I grin evilly at Nicholas, and he looks like he wants to strangle me just a little bit.
$10,000. "You cheap bastard." "I was pissed," Nicholas defends himself. "If I'd been sober, the starting bid would have been much higher."
And we all laugh. Nicholas puts his hand on his brother's shoulder.
"I'm in the penthouse at the plaza. Let's get out of here. Come back with us."
Henry's demeanor changes then, like the thought of being in a quiet place for too long panics him, but he's trying to hide it with a forced smile. It's only then that I notice the gauntness of his cheeks and the dark circles below his eyes.
"I can't. I just got in.
Lots of people to see, shots to drink. Lasses who'll be so disappointed if I leave without fucking them. You know how it is.
Nicholas